It is Friday, July 10th. The markets are moving, the regulators are busy, and everything feels just a little bit more fragile than it did yesterday. OpenAI has launched a new model family and is integrating its developer tools into a broader platform. This move marks a pivot from selling model hype to pushing integrated, agentic utility. The company is now bundling chat, browsing, file management, and automation into a single interface. By folding their developer-focused tools into a unified workspace, they are actively trying to court non-technical knowledge workers. Here is the thing. OpenAI is betting that the future isn't just a smarter chatbot. They want to be the operating system for your professional life. By connecting these models to your local desktop and browser, they are moving the user from a person who writes prompts to an orchestrator of automated tasks. It is a smart play, which is a hell of a thing to say when you look at the financials. The competitive landscape is getting ugly. OpenAI's mid-tier model is now outperforming Anthropic's latest flagship on coding benchmarks. Crucially, it costs significantly less to run. Enterprise customers are obsessed with performance per dollar, and this price gap is putting Anthropic on the defensive. We are already seeing signs of stress, with reports that Anthropic recently reset their usage limits to manage churn. But there is a massive tension between this product expansion and the underlying market reality. Financial analysts are increasingly pointing to the AI sector as a textbook speculative bubble. Capital is being allocated in ways that mirror the late 90s, with billions of dollars flowing into companies that are projecting negative cash flow for years. Investors seem to be ignoring basic valuation metrics, driven almost entirely by a fear of missing out. OpenAI is not immune to these pressures. Some analysts suggest the company faces a high risk of insolvency within 18 months. Their decision to delay an IPO until 2027 is likely a strategic survival move. An audited financial disclosure right now might cause a collapse in investor confidence, which would be a shitty situation for their valuation. The company is trying to solve this by getting close to the state. OpenAI has proposed granting the United States government a 5% stake in the firm. If that goes through, it effectively cements their status as a too-big-to-fail entity. It is a clever way to integrate themselves into the state power apparatus, but it also signals a shift toward a future where the government acts as both the regulator and the ultimate arbiter of who wins and who loses in the AI market. This is where the story gets darker. We are seeing a real disconnect between the aggregate economic benefits of this tech and the reality of the workforce. While companies are racing to automate white-collar tasks, the U.S. lacks any meaningful system for retraining displaced workers. We are looking at a potential mirror of the old steel belt decline, where the gains from new technology never actually reach the people whose jobs were automated out of existence. Product-wise, the strategy is building high switching costs. Once an organization maps its internal processes, like logging into legacy software or syncing data, to these agentic workflows, moving to a competitor becomes a nightmare. It is a classic lock-in play. The goal is to make AI an ambient, invisible component of the digital environment, rather than a tool you just visit for a quick query. But there is a technical bottleneck here, too. A lot of the current agent development prioritizes flashy, unreliable output over production-grade stability. The smart teams are starting to move toward specification enrichment, where agents are forced to query requirements against documented edge cases before they write a single line of code. They are using metrics like Cohen's Kappa, pronounced Cohen's Kappa, to measure when an AI's judgment is good enough and when it needs a human to step in. The takeaway is that we are moving past the phase of raw model benchmarking. Success is now down to who can build the most reliable, integrated workflow layer. Whether that business model can actually survive a market correction is a completely different question. For now, the arms race continues, and the stakes are getting higher than just a few lost venture capital dollars. From the software that runs our offices to the people who are actually getting paid to play, the rules of the game are shifting fast. College sports governing bodies just released a new report on name, image, and likeness deals. They rejected $90 million in proposed contracts, which accounts for 20% of all submissions. Regulators are now using a centralized system to process approvals, handling roughly 90 deals every single day. Any deal over $600 now requires an institutional review to prevent loopholes. It is a massive shift away from the Wild West era of college sports. They are prioritizing auditready compliance over the rapid, unchecked spending we saw just a few years ago, which, honestly, is just a fancy way of saying they are finally trying to put a leash on the money, even if it feels a bit like closing the barn door after the horse has already left the building. Meanwhile, in the professional ranks, the trend is moving toward modularity. The NFL is planning a flag football league that relies on transportable venues instead of permanent stadiums. This follows the strategy used for the recent Cricket World Cup. Leagues are clearly trying to lower their long-term capital risk. They want the flexibility to move markets whenever they feel like it, rather than being anchored to a billion-dollar concrete pit that nobody wants to visit anymore. It's not just the NFL, either. Manchester United is looking to build a massive stadium district, borrowing the American model of turning a venue into a year-round revenue generator. Cities across the globe are starting to view these projects as essential to national economic development. India is even bidding for 65 international events to prime the pump for a potential Olympic run in 2036. It creates a strange reality where public infrastructure planning is now synonymous with sports marketing. The NBA, however, is dealing with a different kind of regulatory headache. The league's investigation into the Kawhi Leonard trade, involving his move from San Antonio to Toronto, resulted in no meaningful sanctions. The consensus is that the league office is terrified of a legal battle with the Players Association. If they set a precedent for how they handle star player sponsorship income, they risk exposing the messy, opaque financial arrangements that define the entire league. It's a hell of a thing to watch a multi-billion-dollar organization decide that looking the other way is better for business than enforcing its own rules. Teams are now forced to treat this regulatory uncertainty as a legitimate line item in trade negotiations. You aren't just trading talent anymore. You are trading risk, pricing in the possibility that the league might suddenly decide to care about the rules tomorrow. Finally, the Miami Dolphins are starting the 2026 season with a 60% dead cap hit. It is the largest in the league. They overhauled their coaching staff and brought in Malik Willis at quarterback. They are betting that absorbing massive financial pain now will buy them future flexibility. It is a risky gamble. If the scheme doesn't work, they have absolutely no secondary path to production. It all ties back to how these organizations view their own survival. Whether it is the governing bodies locking down nil deals, or the NBA avoiding a fight to keep its financial ecosystem intact, the industry is becoming obsessed with risk management. Even our obsession with the trophies themselves is changing. We've gone from neoclassical urns that signify colonial authority to the Pop-Tarts bowl, which literally gives the winner a working toaster. It's a perfect metaphor for where we are. We have traded the sacred, static legacy of the past for viral content and sponsor-led hardware. It is all about brand narrative now. If you aren't turning your victory into a social media clip, you might as well not be winning at all. It's efficient, it's regulated, and it's entirely focused on the bottom line. It's just not very much fun. That level of micromanagement isn't limited to the sports world, though. It's bleeding into the biggest boardrooms in media, where the stakes are getting personal. The proposed merger between Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery is hitting a wall. A coalition of states led by California Attorney General Rob Bonta has launched an antitrust lawsuit, threatening to derail the deal. Paramount faces a $650 million quarterly fee if the merger misses its October 1st deadline. That puts the companies in a shitty situation where they either fold to regulatory demands or risk a compounding financial crisis. These media giants are desperate to stop the bleeding, and they're acting like it. Netflix is pivoting towards short-form, YouTube-style content to squeeze more engagement out of the day. It's a transparent attempt to turn a premium streaming service into a utility, which, honestly, risks gutting the very brand identity that made them a powerhouse in the first place. But it isn't just about Netflix chasing clicks. The industry is trapped in a cycle of creative exhaustion and defensive posturing. The latest Emmy nominations show a lack of new hits, forcing the industry to lean on legacy shows like Hacks. Meanwhile, tech platforms like Meta are trying to train their AI models on creator likenesses without explicit consent. They're using that classic ask for forgiveness, not permission strategy. It didn't work for OpenAI, and it isn't working for Meta now that talent agencies are actually fighting back. The rot goes deeper than just bad business strategy. We are seeing a fundamental erosion of trust in the institutions meant to hold these systems accountable. Take the recent ICE operation in Houston. Local officials are publicly distancing themselves from federal agencies because the official narrative about the shooting doesn't match what witnesses saw. When local governments start actively limiting federal law enforcement, your institutional stability is basically gone. This pattern of optics over reality is showing up everywhere. In Maine, the Democratic Party is struggling to replace a Senate nominee after a scandal, and they are doing it with the clock ticking toward a July 27th deadline. It is a sign of total voter fragmentation. Meanwhile, in Washington, the administration is bypassing traditional legal norms by stacking the president's legal team with civil litigators who are more interested in suing journalists than following standard protocols. The most dangerous part is how this all bleeds into our actual lives. Reports suggest the government is increasingly buying bulk data from private brokers to track citizens, effectively bypassing Fourth Amendment protections. They aren't using warrants anymore. They are just purchasing the location data from the apps on your phone and letting AI algorithms do the dirty work. It turns out, privacy is now just a negotiable commodity. We've moved from a system of targeted legal investigation to one of mass, algorithmic profiling. And because oversight bodies like the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties are being weakened, there is no way to challenge the accuracy of this data. If you end up on a watch list because of a bad line of code, you are basically out of luck. Look, you can see the same lack of faith in the grocery aisle. 61% of Americans are cutting back on food spending. Retailers are slashing prices on staples just to keep people coming through the doors, but it's a losing battle against inflation. The USDA says those costs are going to keep climbing for produce, pork, and poultry. It's all connected. Whether it's social media bans for teens failing to stop usage, or the administration trying to institutionalize electoral advantages by meddling in state-run processes, the theme is the same. We are watching the slow-motion collapse of the guardrails that used to keep things predictable. And when you look at the industry's obsession with AI consciousness, treating it like a real scientific debate, while the software is still basically just predicting the next word, you realize we're prioritizing the shiny, new, and dangerous over the stable and boring. It's a hell of a time to be paying attention. Everything is getting more expensive, less private, and significantly more chaotic. And the people in charge are mostly just hoping we don't notice the seams coming apart. If you think the media mergers sound messy, look at the sheer amount of capital being thrown at the hardware underneath it all. SK Hynix is raising $26.5 billion in a United States share sale. This is the largest foreign listing in American history. The goal is to close the valuation gap between the Korean memory chipmaker and its American competitor, Micron. It is a massive bet on the infrastructure required for the current artificial intelligence boom. Here is the thing. This capital influx is happening while the broader tech sector is showing signs of fatigue. NASDAQ futures have pulled back from their recent highs. Investors are starting to question whether this massive spending cycle on semiconductor infrastructure is sustainable. If the demand for AI models flattens, these companies are looking at a brutal reality of overcapacity and sunk costs. Meanwhile, the consumer economy is sending a very different signal. PepsiCo's second quarter earnings show that people are cutting back on impulse buys at convenience stores. Energy-related spending has seen its sharpest increase since 2009. When the price of gas goes up, the discretionary budget disappears. That is a shitty situation for brands that rely on shoppers behaving as they always have. Global oil demand is expected to drop for the first time since 2020. This is largely due to market volatility and export concerns. If tanker traffic through the Strait of Hormuz faces disruption, those energy prices are going to stay high. That keeps the pressure on the average household wallet. We are effectively watching a split economy. On one side, you have high-intensity capital bets on the future of computing. On the other, you have a consumer base that is being squeezed by the basic, boring reality of energy costs. This brings us to the broader question of how to actually stay solvent when the regime changes. Financial history is littered with people who treated the last 20 years as a permanent rulebook. Meb Faber points out that we often mistake temporary trends for universal laws. For a long time, the stock market was a place to collect dividends. Now, we treat it as a growth engine. If the rules change again, a lot of modern investment models are going to break. Which brings us to the psychology of staying in the game. Morgan Housel talks about the barbell personality. You need to be a relentless optimist about the long-term horizon, but a paranoid survivalist about the path you take to get there. The American economy has survived 34 recessions and 9 major wars since 1850. It keeps trending upward. But the price of admission for that growth is the ability to endure catastrophe without folding. Success in this environment boils down to a few timeless behaviors. Communication is your best force multiplier. If you can explain a complex idea with brevity, you will win. If you can stop judging people you disagree with and start asking how their life experience shaped their view, you keep your support systems intact. The most successful founders are the ones who stop chasing peer respect. Mark Pincus calls this the fur coat moment, when vanity metrics replace actual operational focus. You have to pick the right body of water to swim in. You have to ignore the noise. Most importantly, you have to protect your cap table. Giving away equity for short-term services is a permanent drag on your future control. It is trading $1 million of future value for a temporary fix. Ultimately, building wealth is a progression of behavioral shifts. You start by controlling consumption. You move to mastering deferred gratification. Eventually, you have to manage the complexity of a multi-million-dollar portfolio. It is a marathon that requires breaking long-term goals into discrete, measurable checkpoints. There is a final, quiet trend here that is worth noting. We are moving toward a post-literate society. Data shows that pleasure reading has dropped significantly since 2004. A tiny group of people now consumes the vast majority of books. As we shift toward short-form, visual, and audio information, the capacity for long-form, deductive reasoning weakens. This isn't just a cultural observation. It is a business strategy. Companies are changing their entire models to capture this new, shallower attention span. If you are reliant on traditional, text-based engagement, you are looking at a decline in retention. If you want to survive, you either build the hardware for the AI era or you provide the analog, tactile experiences that people are craving to escape the screen. Either way, the middle is falling out. You are either the utility or the escape. Anyway, keep your head on a swivel. Here is what else is happening today. A few other things worth knowing today. Those chills you get when you hear a perfect song or solve a hard problem, they are actually your brain signaling that your current mental map is broken. It is a physical reaction to realizing you do not understand the world as well as you thought. The clean beauty label is mostly just marketing nonsense. There is no scientific standard behind the term, which means brands use it to charge you more while avoiding any real accountability for their packaging or ingredients. France is currently the most balanced team in their tournament because they quit chasing individual glory. Their midfield duo just stops attacks before they start, which is a hell of a lot more effective than relying on a couple of flashy strikers. Society treats slow recovery from burnout like a personal failure because we are obsessed with constant output. In reality, taking the time to heal is the only way to actually regain the strength needed for any kind of long-term change. Revoking temporary protected status for over 300,000 people is predictably creating a labor nightmare. In places like Springfield, Ohio, employers are now forced to fire legal workers, which leaves them with massive staffing gaps and a hell of a mess to clean up. If you are playing tournament fantasy football, stop betting your whole roster on one team. You might get a short-term boost, but the second that team loses, your season is effectively over. Stop waiting to discover your passion. Obsession is usually just the result of doing something boring and small over and over again until you get good at it. Light pollution is wrecking human sleep cycles and local ecosystems. We have the LED technology to fix it, but we are choosing not to because apparently, regulating light is too much to ask. Blockchain consensus protocols have finally caught up to actual computer science. What used to be an academic exercise in Byzantine fault tolerance is now a requirement for global finance, which is a hell of a thing to say with a straight face. The Europe 2050 initiative is trying to move the continent toward long-term structural planning. They are finally trying to build a cohesive identity to survive the tug-of-war between the United States and China. Graham Plattner dropped out of the main Senate race. Now the Democratic Party has to rush to pick a replacement by July 27th, and naturally, it is going to be party insiders making the call. The American Maximum Pressure campaign on Cuba has successfully wrecked the country's infrastructure. Between the oil embargoes and sanctions, the water systems, public transit, and medical services are essentially falling apart. Renewable energy has officially hit the point where it is cheaper than fossil fuels. Solar and wind are no longer the expensive alternative. They are just the commodity that makes the most sense. That is the update for now. Go touch some grass, and I will see you on Monday.